This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
At the time of Marcus Aurelius's death in the 2nd century AD, the Roman Empire controlled most of the known world. By the end of the 5th century, the empire had disintegrated, and only a small fragment remained in the eastern Mediterranean, a mere shadow of its former might. Well over 1,000 years would pass before the levels of prosperity, literacy, and technological sophistication would again match those of the Roman era. My guest is author and historian Adrian Goldsworthy. His new book is How Rome Fell. His most recent book, of course, is Caesar, which was a New York Times notable book. It's a great honor to welcome to this program live from England, Adrian Goldsworthy. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us. Where exactly are you in...
I'm in the west of the country, just out in South Wales, just outside a place called Cardiff. So
It's wonderful.
Very wet and cold here tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. Adrian, give us Adrian Goldsworthy 101 before we talk about the book. Just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I just grew up being interested in history in this same area where I live today. And somehow the Romans always fired my imagination, probably because 20 miles east of where I live, there's a Roman amphitheater, or the remains of it, and bits of a Roman army base. So I could go and I could crawl all over that as a kid, and it made it very much my history, as well as, you know, the Greeks, the Egyptians, people like that. It was all very well, but they hadn't been where I lived. So there was something very immediate and personal about it. So I've had the good fortune. I got to study ancient history at Oxford and worked on the Roman army, and then after teaching for a while, I've been able to write on the thing. And that's the great thing about writing for a wider audience is that you can deal with topic after topic. You can ask the big questions in a way that if you're formally in the university environment, you have to deal with the small things in great detail and then build up gradually. So it's quite nice to have the grand sweep of things. It's really, in many ways, why I got interested in the first place.
Fantastic. We're talking with author Adrian Goldsworthy. His new book is How Rome Fell, and we'll be giving away a free copy of this big and beautiful book at the end of the interview, so stay with us. Adrian received his doctorate at Oxford. He lectures widely, consults on historical documentaries for the History Channel, National Geographic, and, of course, the BBC. Adrian, before we talk about the fall of the Roman Empire, take us back and underscore the fact that this empire was truly something that the world had never seen before. How big was this thing before it fell?
I mean, it's big even if you look at the map today. The Romans are the only people to have controlled all the lands around the Mediterranean and to have had those under one government. But they stretched to the north of Scotland, they stretched to the Atlantic in the west, to the Euphrates in the east, to the Sahara in the south. It's a big, big area. But when you think in terms of the slow pace of communications, you know, you can't travel further than a horse can ride or a ship can sail at this time. It makes the area even bigger. You know, our world has become quite small, but for the Romans, they're trading with India. They know it's there, and they're very, very dimly aware that there's something called China that's out there, and the Chinese are just as dimly aware that there's something called Rome to the west. But there's no real meaningful contact. You know, they might as well be on another planet. So it's a huge area, and within that, it becomes Roman. The Roman genius wasn't just that they conquered and made an empire, but they didn't colonize so much, or not in many of the regions they went to. They turned the people living there into themselves. They made them Romans. You know, you got the situation where you could have people from Britain, from Spain, from Syria, were Roman citizens, thought of themselves as Romans, acted like Romans, and were treated in that way. Didn't matter what they looked like, what shape they were, what color they were, there was this sense of belonging, which is something quite remarkable.
And for that time, we're talking with author Adrian Goldsworthy, for that time in history, that was a powerful thing, was it not?
It's huge. No one has ever done it before. And really, even the more successful empires of recent centuries haven't quite matched that. I mean, you have perhaps the cultural thing in that since, well, the British Empire first, and then with America's dominance, English is really the second language of the world. And it's, you know, it's the language of a lot of science. It's the language of computers. So you've had that element, and ideas of law have extended. But for the Romans, it's more complete than that. It's not just that you're speaking Latin or Greek or using the language. You are actually a Roman. To be a Roman citizen meant something. Even if you're somebody like, you go to the New Testament and St. Paul, who's a Jew from Tarsus, doesn't speak Latin, but is a Roman citizen and has all the rights and has the status. It's quite a remarkable thing.
And so that phrase, civis Romanus sum, I am a citizen of Rome, that was just gold if you could actually stand up and say that in the world.
It really was. But, I mean, you end up in the 3rd century, they turn a high proportion of the population of the entire empire becomes citizens. So, and even a slave, if you were freed and your master was a Roman, then you became a citizen. And your children, they didn't even have the stigma of being having been a slave. They had the full rights. They could go into politics. They could end up as a senator. It's quite an incredible system.
The book is How Rome Fell. We're talking live from England with author Adrian Goldsworthy. It's an honor to have him on the program. So, Adrian, tell us now why you wrote this book specifically, because, when I studied classics in college and, even in high school, I thought this question had been answered. It was the barbarians from the north, and they invaded, and Rome was ripe for the picking, and it just sort of crumbled.
It's certainly, it's the barbarians that come across the Rhine and the Danube and they carve up the Western Roman Empire. The Franks will go into what the Romans called Gaul, we call France, after the Franks, because they're the ones who create a new kingdom. People will overrun Spain, they'll overrun North Africa. So they're the ones who deliver the sort of the killer blow. But you have to look and try and understand, well, how is that possible? Rome is bigger than anyone else by a massive degree. It's more sophisticated. It has got this large professional army that is better equipped, better trained, better disciplined, has better technology than anybody else out there in the world. And it's simply just larger, it's more powerful. And yet, these groups of barbarian tribes seem to be able to saunter in and just rape, pillage, and then take the place themselves and occupy it. So there's two things to explain, really. One is How can this happen? How come the Romans can't fight these people off? They've been doing it for centuries, but suddenly it doesn't seem to work anymore. The other thing is that there's been a strange trend in academic study of the period, which has rather sort of downplayed the whole fall of the empire and looked at it as this gradual transformation into a sort of rather cozy medieval period when, culturally, religiously, things don't really change. Maybe you've got a different government, but it can't be all that bad. That doesn't work as soon as you look closely at the living conditions of people. Things get a lot worse. They get a lot more local. But people have stopped looking at why the empire fell. And although the invasions are important, and they're clearly what happened, I wanted to understand, how were those possible? How could those succeed?
It's a great question to ask because, you just got done explaining to us that this was something the world had never seen. It was this preeminent power on the globe. Culturally and militarily, it was unprecedented. So how did it fall then?
Well, the closer I looked, the thing that jumped out to me, which I found wasn't really mentioned in most of the other accounts, most of the other histories, people just seem to ignore, is the ability of the Romans to fight each other. Now, if you look at the first two centuries of the Roman Empire from Augustus onwards, who's, creates this system, they occasionally, every century or so, they have a civil war when the dynasty ends. But basically, things are stable. You get to the 3rd century AD, and then right up until the complete collapse of the Western Empire at the end of the 5th century, so for over 250 years, there are only 3 decades without a civil war. And the Romans are busy killing each other, fighting for power. Nearly every emperor dies violently. He's nearly always killed by the man who replaces him or somebody hired by that person. They fight battles. More Roman soldiers get killed fighting other Romans than they do fighting the barbarians. And the system rots from the top. This political instability, this infighting, gradually means that emperors realize that the dangerous enemies aren't some German chieftain, aren't even a Persian king, which is the next largest, the next most sophisticated kingdom out there. Your most dangerous enemies are other Romans, because they will kill you and they will take your job. And that doesn't have a cultural impact. Politically, things don't change. But what happens is emperors end up thinking in terms of personal survival as their principal objective. They're not concerned with ruling well. They're not concerned with keeping the empire secure. It's staying alive and staying in power. And when the people at the top think like that, Their rivals are their own generals, their own bureaucrats, their own ministers. They can't trust those people. Those people know they're not trusted by the emperor, know they can be executed, so they're nervous. You end up with an entire system where everybody at each level is far more concerned with staying alive than they are with actually doing anything efficiently.
So all the good things, we're talking with author Adrian Goldsworthy, the new book is How Rome Fell. So all the wonderful, progressive good things that we saw perhaps under Caesar Augustus truly is a devolution of government. They do less, and what they do is pretty bad.
There is, but they take more power to themselves, and they try and legislate more. You get far more laws. You get a massive increase in proportion in the size of the bureaucracy. I mean, it's still absolutely nothing compared to a modern state because the Roman Empire doesn't educate its people. It doesn't provide any sort of health service. It does very little, but it ends up hiring more and more people to do less and less. It just becomes inefficient. The army is there. In theory, it's still big. In theory, it's still sophisticated in the 4th, even in the 5th centuries. And yet, when, for instance, the barbarian tribes push into Spain in the early 5th century, there should have been a Roman army there waiting to meet them. On paper, it still exists. But we hear nothing at all about it. It's just gone. People have the money's been siphoned off. People are there. You know, people are holding the positions of responsibility. They're drawing the pay. But there don't actually seem to be any soldiers or no one capable of fighting. And so you've got this system where you still have massive resources. You're wealthier, you're bigger, you've got a larger population than anybody else, but you can't direct those resources to solve any problem.
Is there a real sense in which, is there a diminishing of patriotism? Because I would just wonder at some point you would think that the citizens would say, oh my gosh, this is Rome. This is patria. I mean, this is our homeland, and we've got to do something. But it seemed like that just didn't bring people together anymore.
It doesn't so well. I mean, the problem is often their sense of patriotism is, well, I should be emperor then, and it's rebel against the current government rather than support it. Some people withdraw from life altogether. You've got the origins of monasticism, and people will go out into the desert and live as hermits, but they'll drop out of society. But that's a tiny fraction. A lot of the aristocracy stay out of politics because it's just too dangerous. You know, that's a good way to get yourself killed because nobody's ever going to trust you. But the strange thing, the one thing that is so different to the collapse of, say, the British Empire in the 20th century or any of the European empires, is that you don't have people in Spain or in Gaul suddenly deciding, well, let's stop being Romans, let's be Spanish, let's be Gauls, let's be British. There isn't the sort of the wind of change you had that where countries in Africa, in Asia, decided that they very much wanted to be in charge of themselves. They didn't want to be ruled by a foreign power. That doesn't happen, strangely, in Rome. People are still desperate to be Roman. It's just that the state is less and less capable of protecting them, of controlling them. Sometimes you'll become loyal to a local baron or a local landowner because he can protect you, maybe, from the barbarians. Or sometimes you've got to grudgingly say, well, this barbarian king's strong enough. Perhaps if we pay him enough taxes, we pay him, he'll protect us from the other barbarians. At least that's some sort of security.
We're talking with author Adrian Goldsworthy. The new book is How Rome Fell, and we'll be giving away a free copy here. Adrian, of course, the elephant in the room here is the extent to which we can compare the fall of Rome to the situation with more modern nation states, whether it's Spain, France, England, or even the American Empire today, and some of the challenges that it is facing in a truly globalized world. To what extent do we have apples to apples, and to what extent is this an impossible comparison?
You've obviously, from the start, have got to realize there are some massive, massive differences. The sheer pace of communications, all of that is so fast now that our world, things happen a lot quicker. And, you know, you can have exchanges from one side of the planet to the other. There are also big differences in the way people think. The Romans didn't have to deal with free press. They didn't have to deal with international law, with international organizations. They could be pretty nasty to everybody else out there. The Romans didn't really acknowledge anybody else's right to exist. You know, the Romans have rights. The Romans should be protected, but they don't really care about the outside world. So a lot of things like that. The Romans were considerably nastier than any decent Western state would be today, or even in the Victorian period. So there are some, and most of the changes are, on the whole, rather good ones that we should be glad we haven't got the Romans around. On the other hand, human beings haven't changed that much. You know, society alters the way we think about certain things, but nevertheless, at a basic level, we react in the same way, we behave in the same way. I think the reassuring thing is that if you look at Rome's situation and you compare it to, particularly to America today, is that, you know, things are nowhere near as bad as they were for the Romans. The most obvious thing being you don't have that same cycle of civil war, of plot, of rebellion. You know, after the last presidential election, the losing candidate doesn't go off, raise an army, and march on Washington, right, which for a Roman would be the perfectly normal thing to do. So, you know, we have dangers in that. Something that the Romans' experience tells us is that you can end up with a government or an institution or indeed a company or any sort of collective human endeavor where if you forget what you're there for, what the basic reason for your existence, then it's very easy for you to keep on going with the personal agendas of the people involved. So it becomes all about your own success, your own profit, your own survival, your own priorities. And if you ever forget, if you become dominated to a degree by lobby groups, by the interest of the individual or the party, then you can forget what you should be doing, what is the wider good. And that, once that happens, doesn't necessarily mean that things are catastrophic straight away, because if you're big, if you're powerful, if you're successful, just like the Romans can be in decline for 2.5 centuries before they finally collapse. But there's that element of it makes you vulnerable. It means that if a crisis comes along, you might not cope.
And you can collapse in degrees there when we see that disregard for the wider good.
That's the danger, is that you see these smaller problems, you don't deal with it, but it isn't enough to push you over. So things continue, and then you don't deal with the basic problems that have caused them in the first place, or make it more difficult for you to respond flexibly to a changing situation. So there's that warning from human behavior, because the Roman experience shows us that when you get to a certain size, you probably don't have a competitor who's an equal. And this can be true of a multinational corporation or a country. You know, there isn't a level playing field of competition quite often, so that you can be doing not as well as you should be doing, but it might not be obvious that there are serious problems, that there are serious flaws with how things work.
Adrian Goldsworthy is preeminent historian of the ancient world, the author of many acclaimed books, most recently Caesar, which was a New York Times notable book. His latest is How Rome Fell, a big, beautiful book. Adrian, quite an undertaking. You really did a magnificent job. It's a beautiful book.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, it's been great to be asked.
We're going to break here at the top of the hour for CBS News, local news and weather. Let's open up the phone lines at 977-1070. To caller number 4, a free copy of Adrian Goldsworthy's new book, How Rome Fell, which comes in at an amazing, just over about 500 pages, complete with pictures and charts. Caller number 4, 977-1070. A quick break for CBS News, local news and weather. When we get back, my friend Norman Leahy with Tertium Quids, a libertarian blog. And Norm has been doing some fantastic investigative reporting into the latest news, perhaps scandal, dare say I, about the work of the Faith and Family Alliance. If you've heard about this, Norm knows all the details, and he can fill you in what he claims are very obvious connections to Bob McDonnell and the new Republican Party of Virginia chairman, Pat Mullins. All that coming up. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
Last night on The Best Seat in the House, we talked with the Hall of Famer, Dom Stoddard.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.